Hello, friends, and welcome to a brand new Marvel Snap podcast. As always, I'm Roy Rogers, and I am joined today for the sixth episode of Snap Judgments by my friend and yours, Aaron Glazer. How are you doing this evening, Glazer?
I mean, I'm doing better than our erstwhile co-host, Chris Levin, who is out sick. I'd also like to take this quick opportunity to apologize. We promised you we would have social media by this week. However, Chris got sick. My dad is fine, but has COVID, which means I'm on full-time daddy duty this week. And social medias are coming. We absolutely promise. But it'll be before the next episode.
Until then, you can engage with us on Snap Fans Discord. We have our own channel, which has been blowing up a little bit. We appreciate everybody who has already come and engaged with us. There will be a link if you would like to engage with us more in the description show notes to this episode. You can also, of course, email us at snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. We're going to have further social medias. We're on more podcatchers than we were before, but we are currently being left on Red by Spotify and Amazon Music. It's the holidays. We're not here to judge underpaid behind the scenes tech workers. But we are trying our best to get everywhere we can. We had some issues with our images. I figured it out this week. That was my podcast thing that I did. So we are again fully reachable via email at snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com or on the SnapFan Discord. But besides getting into contact with us, Aaron, what are we here to discuss on this ignoregnum between Christmas and New Year's?
Oh my God, we have so many topics this week. So we're going to tell you where we're ranked. We're going to go over the recent news. We have a couple questions from readers, including one that no one is going to want to answer to except for one person who asked. We are going to review four different decks. And after we review four different decks, we are going to do awards. We have a series of awards for this year. Is that it? Oh, we also were reviewing a variant. We're doing a variant of a card of the week and going over all its variants. All that for you, dear listener, over the next 17 hours of this podcast.
Since it's just the two of us, we'll probably move a little bit faster than we normally do, but we'll see. We're both loquacious people. Well, that does sound like a good way to ring out 2022 and move on to the year of our Lord 2023. So let's start from the top. Aaron, you have news for our loyal listeners, don't you?
I'm infinite. I tried to do it with Roy and with Chris at separate times and then got stuck at 99.5 and 99.2 and 99.8 once. Mm-hmm. And then I was going to go to sleep and I was like, oh crap, I haven't done my dailies. And just casually rolled over the 100 mark. I did it playing almost entirely two decks. I played a Serra deck, which we'll go over at a later date. It's running Arrow as its topic. Along with Serra, I'm not sure if that's right or not, but it sure is fun. And the other deck is a deck I stole from our good friends at SnapFan. I don't know whose deck it was originally, but I titled it Ramp 2 because I have a different ramp deck that I used to help climb up this far. And Ramp 2, Roy saw, was just really dominant. It just sort of kicked ass. I have stopped playing that now that I'm above 100. I've actually just, since I'm above 100, unless the game demands I win for dailies, I've been chucking cubes at people left and right as much as I can, because I mean, Merry Christmas, y'all,
and a Happy New Year. I myself have managed to crawl my way to 70. I did that with a combination. I think the last time we spoke, I might have just hit 60. Maybe I was in the mid 50s. I did this through a combination of playing a lot of different things, but primarily playing the Agatha deck that was posted by the devs as the best Agatha deck in Marvel Snap. It is a lot of fun. We're going to talk about it a little bit later, I believe. And but the real climb machine was this Bootman deck, this kind of like a control tempo deck that has a lot of the good tech cards in it and is just really able to go under and answer a lot of what's going on in the meta. It is a very technical deck, though, and it can definitely sometimes you can play yourself into a loss that you should have been able to win. So it's definitely very challenging to play.
So just for the record, Bootman is on YouTube and has, I think, just hit 4,000 followers. If you're listening and you're not following Bootman on YouTube and you are like interested in Marvel Snap Concept on YouTube, Bootman's a really positive dude who does not just brew what everyone else does, which is really nice. This deck is, I think he got it from elsewhere, but like he's fundamentally popularized it and hit Mythic with it twice, and it's super fun. But for real, go follow Bootman because the content is positive and like there's a lot of technical aspects explained. He today released a video that's like 7 books to read, most of which I know and have read. But like it's like Thinking Fast and Slow and stuff that like Roy will be familiar with. 7 books to read that will make you better at Marvel Snap. And like I don't know if I would read books to get better at Marvel Snap as a general rule, but like I appreciate that effort and positivity as an English teacher.
Absolutely.
Who doesn't teach books?
It's true, you don't teach books. I mean, a lot of English teachers don't teach books these days. That's the little secret. That's some educator secret sauce that your children might know, but you might still think that you're stuck, that kids are still stuck reading the Scarlet Letter, which thankfully we have moved beyond. But beyond strong American Renaissance opinions, I have strong opinions about the American Renaissance. we should definitely move on to talk about some news. We are now here at the end. It's less news and more sort of like the state of Marvel Snap right now, because there's actually not a lot of news because, as I understand it, the Second Dinner team are on vacation this week, understandably. It is the interregnum between Christmas and New Year's. But we are at the end of the Silver Surfer season. Glazer, how do you feel at the end of this season with all of the sort of changes to the past that we talked about in previous episode, I believe episode 3, and sort of what Silver Surfer did for the metagame?
Surfer, I think, was, and I'm correct me if I'm wrong, the first non-5 or 6 that was a turn 6 play. And it completely warped the meta and how the game was played. Like, he became the turn 6 play for his deck, along with Sarah, ideally, 2 other things, or with negative several other things, or if you didn't see any of that, just Surfer and another 3. He became a deck, a build around as a 3, in a way. I guess in some ways you can argue that Patriot can sometimes come down on the last turn,
Patriot,
but like
it's Mystique,
not a necessity, and Cerebro. But Cerebro, like none of those are like necessities in the way that Surfer was, right? Yeah. Like those are cards that you can play the last turn. You'd like to play the last turn very often, but like if that's your turn 3 play, you just kind of shrug and play them on 3.
Yeah.
Surfer, like, you will just sit on turn 3, which led to the Leech meta, right? Like, he is the direct cause of that, like, weird 3-day Leech detour everyone took, and now Leech is just a regularly seen card. I think that, like, as a Season Pass card, like, if you haven't bought the Season Pass, this is a pull 5 card in, like, a few days, right? And, like, this is... God. This might immediately be the most powerful pull 5 card the second it gets there. If it's not there, it's freaking close. I think, look, I know that the rate they're selling anything at in this game, right? A pull 5 card is at least $200 or so of spending, right? Like, yeah, in terms of collector's tokens and whatever. And they're giving you this one for 10 bucks. And like, 10 is a lot less than 200. You don't have to get him. You can just wait. But he is a build around. He is extremely, extremely powerful. He warped the meta around him and changed the game completely because he is so good. I think Surfer is an extraordinarily cool card that I'm very happy is in the game. I don't really want him to be nerfed or changed. But I think he's pushing the upper boundaries of strength.
I agree with all of what you're saying, except I think where I disagree is, I think we talked about this a little bit. Like, I think the leech meta is much more prominent than you would think, as someone who is sitting in sort of like normal person ranks, not sort of above 50, below infinite, where sort of probably most people who play Marvel Snap at least semi-seriously end up. Leech is still very much there, and I think Leech isn't going to go anywhere, because now with these Surfer decks, there are now multiple decks that you need to answer what they can play out of their hand, just sheerly like on the trigger that they provide from your hand. So I think Leech is going nowhere, unless maybe, well, we'll talk a little bit about what's forthcoming. Maybe the cat will change that. But I think Leech is going to be a permanent fixture in the meta. And I think that that's really interesting. I do want to second your thing. Like, Surfer is inarguably worth $10. Like, I think if you play Marvel Snap pretty seriously, you should spend the $10 on it. Even at this point, without any of the cosmetics. Like, literally, if you buy it at the last possible second, I think it's just straight up worth $10 without any of the other value for the pass. Both because of, as you said, pool five cards are hundreds of dollars, maybe somewhere between $100 to $300, depending how good your RNG is. Just paying $10 for, boom, I think much more than the two other that you and I have experienced. Miles is a card I was happy to spend $10 on. Like, I enjoyed my time with, and I like having him in my collection. Same with Black Panther. I really enjoy Black Panther decks, particularly now that I have Zola. But I think you could argue that neither of those cards are a necessity for a serious collection. So even if you are a free-to-play or low-spending player, right now in the game, buying Silver Surfer is the best value, inarguably, even without the rest of the pass. Speaking of the value of the pass, though, how, Glazer, did you think about specifically like what you unlock from the pass? And infinite. You hit infinite twice now. Do you think hitting infinite and getting that Galactus title is better or worse than the card back, which has now been moved into the pass, at least for one
season? Titles are stupid and should go away. I've been using Slightly Radioactive. It was the first title I got. I slapped it on, and I forget. I remember about one today. I go, oh, yeah, that's still my thing. Maybe I'll throw it to the Galactus just to, like, humble brag, I guess. maybe not, right? Like, I definitely used my cool Dora... What's the second word of that?
Dora Maje? Maji?
Yeah, sure. That I used that card back a fair amount to be like, look, I made infinite, because I'm fairly proud of it. I think it's an accomplishment. There's definitely some grind involved. I'd rather have a card back. And honestly, like, screw all that. I don't know if we're rated M for mature, so I cut out my curse. But, like, screw all that. Just give me a, like, I reach infinite, give me 1,000 credits. Have a great day. Like, I'd much rather just have 1,000 credits than anything else they can give me. Or, like, give me 500 collector's tokens, right? Like, give me something, like, in-game that makes it worth it.
I don't think they're going to give 500 credit tokens.
I'm aware. Like, I'm aware that they're not going to. I'm just saying, like, these are things I would prefer. Honestly, I'd prefer 100 collector's tokens to this stupid freaking title. Like, if you were, like, 100 collector's tokens,
what about sell 50? That title. What about 50?
No, because that would mess up my brain, because then, like, I'd have to have another rating at 50, where I'd always be at that, like,
weird 50. I feel like 50. I have, like, 50 somehow.
You should.
Maybe I don't. Be able I, to. Don't I don't. Maybe I just have a weird number. I have, like, 3,100. Like,
that shouldn't be possible at all. I don't know. Like, making infinite is fine. Like, the title is stupid. What I'm happy about, what I want, is credits and gold, right? I will be at the end of our 2-week event coming up on the 1st, be at a little bit above 2,000 gold again, which means that, like, as long as they keep doing it this way, each big season, each big pass is about $50 and not about $100. And that's like way to go, second dinner. Cause like, I would not spend $100 a month, but I think I'm about willing to spend 50, right? Like, I'm not unwilling to spend 50 a month, 60 with the 10 for season pass, right?
Like, I was thinking about that actually today. I think once I hit pool 3, like, complete, I will not be willing to spend $50 a month.
I actually said that, not the Discord. You're right.
I think once I'm pool 3 complete, I'll stop. But until then, yeah, like I want to build my collection up to get, because at that point, like I'm willing to go through the slog of slowly getting fours that can move into threes, and you know, occasionally maybe being able to buy a pool four, pool five card with collector's tokens. I mean, maybe if they like give you a ton of collector's tokens in some bundle, I would be willing to do it. But like, if the repeating of the like, I feel like part of me feels like the Sunspot one is going to be the one in the future versus the Apocalypse one, because it's like slightly less value, but not like so much that the like dolphins like you and me aren't willing to spend it. But like, inarguably, as long as I'm playing Marvel Snap, I'll buy a Battle Pass each month. I think once I'm pool three complete, and I have a feeling that the variants that they offer in is just going to get more and more like desirable character. So like they like, you know, Apocalypse, very played card, right? Sunspot, very played card. Like, have they leaked which one is the next one? You know, like if they do like Doom, right? Or they just sold a cosmetic Doom, so they wouldn't do Doom. I'm trying to think. And the son is Sarah Magneto. There we go. Magneto. Like that could be a card.
That, like, give her a couple of Marvel.
Yeah. Or Magneto Jubilee. And Chuck. You know, or Jubilee or something like that. Like they could definitely get people as more and more people get closer and closer to, like, serious spenders get closer and closer to pool three complete.
I think this is one of the big downsides of their business model right now. Like, they probably don't want to disincentivize me from whaling, right? Mm-hmm. Like, once pool three is done, they have fundamentally disincentivized me from it.
Yeah.
Like, there's very little reason for me to want to push forward with whaling once, like, I'm done with it. Because my chances of getting anything with my credits at that point, and credits are the main draw, right? Like, if you extra collectors token, they're not worth that money alone. Credits are the main draw, but the odds are so low that you get them that, like, I'm not really as interested as I would be. I'm at 9 cards left in pool three, and I will likely spend $50 until I'm done, right? Like, and then honestly, if I'm getting halfway there on their free gold every month, if I just do every other month at that point, right? I'm still able.
It's
to
not
buy
their free gold, right? It's the right. Season pass gold. So it's
well,
it's like
season pass gold. Plus you
infinite.
Get the your weekly whatever gold, right? Plus your each level of your regular level, like your infinite, right? And like plus like the free season pass caches at the end, plus any login rewards, plus yada yada yada.
Yeah.
There's enough free ways to get gold that I think I should be able to earn about $50 to $100 in gold every 2 months, or at least close enough.
Yeah, I mean, like, I bought the Apocalypse bundle, like, later than you all did, and I was already at nearly 2,000 gold when we bought the Sunspot, and I'm already also, like you, just shy of 2,000 gold, and that's without the extra gold. I'm not, what is it, 90 you get the gold? Like, I haven't gotten that, right? That's just from just opening caches, right? Not caches, the whatever they're called for the pass, the season pass.
Well, but there's also the one that's above. I'm going to look on. I'm opening Snap to figure out what it's called. Okay, I guess I should keep Snap open. But like, there's the weekly one you get, right? Like where like you get a certain amount of season pass progress for like completing daily missions.
Mm-hmm.
Like whatever that is ends up giving like 400 or 500 gold a week too. That's like my favorite one of all of them in the game. The weekly challenge one.
The weekly challenge, yeah. The weekly challenge is, I also enjoy. I get a lot of satisfaction filling that up, actually.
I guess it's not that much gold. Jesus.
It's not that much.
10, but 15, 25, 10 plus 15 plus 25 plus 50 plus 100.
Don't you get 100 then?
That's still not bad at all.
But anyway, I think that we should probably move on and talk about the watch list. So last time we spoke, I believe Galactus was officially on Second Dinner's watch list. Quite understandably, it's one of the most hated cards in the game. Beat it twice today, by the way, in an otherwise kind of unsuccessful day of sort of floating between 69 and 72. But Also, we saw everyone's second favorite card, Leader, is also on the watch list. So, Glazer, what do you think of sort of Galactus and Leader both being sort of out there as the two cards that are officially on Second Danger's radar to be eaten up by the Nerf bat? It's on the dinner plate. There we go.
Oh, God. I'm still fine with Galactus. I think as long as he remains pull five forever, like he can never come down, right? As long as he remains pull five forever, I have no beef with Galactus. But Galactus can eat my planet anytime. Sometimes he beats me, sometimes I beat him. I think the decks are relatively inconsistent. I like that they make me think about different things when I'm playing a game, right? Like, I'm fine with Galactus. Is it my favorite thing in the world? No. But, okay. Leader should get nerfed. I don't think Leader is that bad, really. I think Leader is more annoying than terrible. But, like, he makes the... I think, fundamentally, Leader makes the game less fun, not more fun. Like, yeah, what Leader says is, if you're ahead at the end, the game is over, right? And, like, a last... For a lot of decks, right? And a card that says, your last turn, you get to do your big cool shit, doesn't count or doesn't help you win at all is just kind of bad for the game. I don't know how or in what way I change Leader. Part of me thinks they're just going to make him like a 6-1, but like,
or 6-0.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes it better in negative, right? So it has to be -1.
I don't think it makes him better in negative.
Right? Like Leader just, for zero, I mean, it's like you play yourself plus your Leader. Like
Sure. It's just Mr. Negative is, in general, unless you have Bast and Adam Warlock going early, giving you two cards, right? Like, everyone kind of overreacts to the better in Mr. Negative deck thing, because in most games, if you are lucky and get your Mr. Negative, you're getting two negated cards. A turn 5 draw and a turn 6 draw, right? Because he doesn't affect your hand.
So like, sometimes to turn 4, that. Like he is sometimes coming out on 3 with the people who have Psylocke. But there's I do regret not buying.
Yeah, there's exactly one card in the game that does that. Right? Like there's one card in the game, and then you have to have like a perfect draw for that to be a thing. I genuinely don't think it makes him significantly better. Like at all.
I think so my attitude towards Leader is this. So like in games, there is like, let's say there's 100 fun units, right? I do think Leader is a fun card. Having played a lot of Death Wave, that's how I've saved my ranking today with Leader. Like I enjoy those Leader games a lot. I get a lot of the fun. Like I get like 80 to 90% of the fun and my opponent only gets, you know, like 10 or 20% of the fun. I think you ideally want to shift that to more 60-40 so that the person playing the card gets a lot of joy, but you don't feel like a whole game is invalidated, which Leader sometimes does feel like, particularly in certain decks, and I think Deathwave does a good job of this, of you don't even need to be ahead in two lanes, you just need to be ahead in one lane, and then you can win. I think that's kind of frustrating for people and understandable. I also think that Leader is fine. Like, I think that the more you play with and against Leader, the more you sort of come to realize that, you know, Leader is a card that requires some setup to be a good card. And is it always like a, you know, auto win button? But I do understand people who are frustrated with the card and nerfing it. Like, I think it could just be like the lane. Like it really depends on like what Second Dinner's goal and what they like, what role they see Leader being. Like, is Leader meant to be this kind of generic top end card? Is he meant to be a build around card? Is he meant to be some kind of like tech card against kind of death decks, right? Where like he's a mirror breaker. Like, it would really be like where does Second Dinner view like what they want Leader to be? Like, fundamentally, what is the heart of the card? And once you want, if they said that or somewhere, it'd be easier to sort of figure out what they would do to the card. And I think all the other previous nerfs, like, it was pretty clear what the card's role was. And it just sort of like slight tweaks gets it to where they want it to be. I think that's a lot harder with Leader. Aaron's silence is telling. So let's move on to some reader Q&A. So Aaron, you're the most active of the two of us in the Discord. What are our loyal listeners saying and asking us?
I'm going to say this name poorly. We're going to ask you how to pronounce it before we do another episode. But listener Gicavio is how I'm going to go with it. Asks first, is Destroyer still good? And I don't have Destroyer. He's one of my last nine. But I've played against a lot of him. Roy, you have played Destroyer. What do you think?
I think Destroyer is still good. Destroyer is just no longer on the top of the meta. Like, I think there are better things to be doing than Destroyer. I think before Destroyer got nerfed, Destroyer was in the sort of top three things you could be doing in Marvel Snap. I think both the printing of Silver Surfer and lowering Death's power by one really did make it so it's easier to go over the top of Destroyer, and the awkward things that Destroyer asks of your deck become more obvious when it's not guaranteed that playing Destroyer on turn six wins you the game. So I think Destroyer is still good. Destroyer is still very playable, but I think that Destroyer is now, to kind of use a bastardized term, like a tier 1.5 deck versus being a tier one, or some people would have argued S tier deck.
I think Destroyer is kind of where it always was. I think it's a very good deck. I don't think it's ever going to be great or top of the meta. I don't think it really was before. I think it's easy to build. It's fun. It's consistent. I think you're probably, unless you're phenomenal at this game, not going to hit Mythic on, with Destroyer. Infinite. Sorry, I played Magic yesterday. I played Commander, which was miserable because I hate Commander. But, wow.
Yeah. Things Aaron would not do with me, by the way.
Sure, I would. If I was at your apartment and you were like, let's play Commander with four people, I'd be like, if you have a deck and you can explain it to me in two sentences, we can move on with life. I'll play your Commander. However, I don't think Destroyer can reach Infinite, but if I was a player who was in the 30s to like 30 to 50 range, maybe even a little higher, and I was just like, I can't figure out how to win, this Destroyer is the deck I would play. It's like you can occasionally screw yourself over, but like it's straightforward and powerful as hell. And like straightforward and powerful as hell is effective. I think that it is worth playing, it is worth taking seriously. When you play against it, when I first started running into it, figuring out how to play around Destroyer versus Spectrum was a nightmare.
Like, it is the hardest thing about it.
Yeah, when I was early pool three, I was like, okay, are they going to Destroyer or Spectrum? And I would just guess and be wrong. And now, like, I played against it 10,000 times. So, like, I can look at the board and be like, oh, they're gonna, if they have Spectrum, they're just Spectrum. Right, so I just play the beat Spectrum board, and if they Destroyer, oh well, congrats. They probably blew up half their board anyway at that point to trick me. But like, one way or the other, that has worked out.
I think another important thing to say about Destroyer is when Destroyer was, this is sort of another consequence of Surfer. I think the way the meta has shifted is one of the nice things about Destroyer is Destroyer, you could run all the tech cards in Destroyer. You know, some of the most powerful ones being, you know, the dog being the most obvious one, and the dog also part of the drone game plan, Cosmo. Yes, I just call him dog. And
There's also Lockjaw.
That's true. Although Lockjaw's not technically a dog. Lockjaw isn't Lockjaw like a human being that was transformed into, I don't know.
Well, anyway,
an inhuman.
He is not a human being. It's in the name.
I thought they start off as humans and then they
become humans.
But anyway, let's not get lost in Marvel lore. Anyway, okay. The Russian dog, Cosmo, not the moon dog of Lockjaw.
I want a card that's a moon dog.
You could run all of those cards. And now I think there are more flexible decks that run those same tech cards. And I think Destroyer's big drawback is that it is inflexible. It has sort of specific play patterns it needs to do. And that lets it easier, as Glazer just said, to play around versus other decks that, you know, their benefit is it has like 2 to 3, sometimes even 4 game plans that it can follow, while Destroyer can't really do that very often, at least. Sometimes you run into some weird games, you know, like, but anyway, let's move on to our second question, which apparently Glazer, there's one more before we get to the Glazer story hour.
We got two more.
Which is, was the one power nerf warranted for Destroyer and Angela? And so, Sarah, I guess she was also nerfed as well.
Angela was too easy to be a 2/7. As a 2/6, potentially, I think she's significantly worse, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I was putting her in everything's a 2/7, and now I feel like that negative one strength means I'd often rather just, like, take a flyer on a Mojo or a Mysterio or something like that once you're in pool 3. I think she's still fairly ubiquitous in pool 1 and 2. But I think that it brought her in line. She's still great, but, like, you're measuring that greatness versus being predictable. I think that, like, that has real value. I don't think Destroyer ever needed the negative one. Like, I don't think it... Like, I think he was just fine at 16, and I'd probably put him back. I never thought the extra power was the problem with him. And, like, hey, destroy your whole board is, like, a real downside, right? So, given that that's one hell of a real downside, I think, in general, we should, encourage him to be really strong outside of that. It's part of the reason Agatha is a 14, right? Like, if you're going to have a big downside, then you should have the power.
There's no downside to Agatha. It's just pure joy, Glazer. I agree with all the things that you're saying there, my friend. I think, to add an additional point, I think Angela is probably the best of the nerfs, I think, because she's now in line with all the other two drops, right? And I think there are reasons to run Angela in a deck. Before, it was like 11 cards and Angela, it felt like, in a lot of decks. And now, you know, Mojo being a clear one they mentioned before, I think Lizard is another one that gets sort of like better with sort of, there's just more flexibility in your two drop decisions, but there's still places to play Angela. You know, obviously, like, I know you don't believe in these decks, but like, negative decks really like Angela, like a 0/2 that went when you play a bunch of stuff into that lane is really quite excellent. You know, there's places for Angela, but she's not everywhere. And definitely you have to think more about like both where to put her and when to play her. And I think the biggest successful nerf actually, though, was Sarah. Sarah is still strong, but she's definitely a little bit worse. So you still play all Sarah decks, but it does like slightly lower the power of the deck. And that's, I think, exactly what you want in a nerf, right? Like, the deck, not unplayable, still really strong, but just slightly turn the temperature down on those decks. And I've been really impressed, actually. I think that was the single best nerf of all three of them.
So between Sarah, Angela, and we forgot Mysterio. And Mysterio, let me write that so we just have it in our notes. But between Sarah, Angela, and Mysterio all going in one deck, I've lost, like, I lost one earlier today. I lose a few games a day. I play a lot of Sarah. By one power somewhere, that one of those extra powers would have gotten me that game. And I think that's exactly what you want. It just increases the inconsistency. Sarah's my favorite thing to do, really. But I wouldn't hate to see her be a 5/3. I don't think that would break anything. I still think she would be one of the best cards, except that I think that, like, I would have to plan better. I would have to be more careful. I'd have to, like, add an extra couple power here or there, right? And I think that's ultimately good for the game.
I don't think they need to do anything to Sarah at this point.
Look, I'm not going to be sad if they just leave my favorite card alone, right? But I think for the health of the game, I wouldn't hate her being a 5-3. I think that's reasonable. I don't think Mysterio really needed a nerf at all, much like Destroyer. I think Mysterio was fine as a 2-5. Very often, like,
when was Mysterio nerfed? Wait, he wasn't nerfed from the...
Yeah, he was. He was a 2-5.
All right. You keep talking, Aaron. I got to look this up.
Okay. Mysterio was nerfed from a 2-5 to a 2-4. And that nerf, I don't think, was necessary. I think that, like, while those three bodies, the blank ones, can be really, really good in a lot of decks like Patriot or whatever, or like just general stuff, right? There's enough like Superflow type locations where now it's a dead card. And there's enough like you can only play throne rooms and whatever the one that's called that gives you four copies of the card. And all of these things are really, really, really kind of terrible for Mysterio. And I think for that, I was fine with him as a 2-5 with potential upside, but also potential downside. I don't hate him as 2-4. He still remains one of my favorite cards and is part of my single favorite two-card combo in the game, which is Bishop on 3 and into Mysterio and another 2 on 4. But with all that said, I still don't think it was necessary. So I think we were successful for Angela and Sarah, but Destroyer and Mysterio were better the way they were. Roy is still Googling furiously.
Yeah, I guess. Oh, that's right. They did change him, and that they changed that thing about Onslaught, which we didn't talk about.
Oh, right. Onslaught is
being additive.
Additive and exponential. And yeah, that's fine.
Yeah,
I think like it for in the cases where it matters, the additive still wins, right?
It usually does. Yeah, I'm sure it's easier on their computers. You know what it probably was? I did not have Mysterio then, and I wasn't seeing him a lot. Maybe because I was in pool two, just out of pool two, maybe when those nerfs came down. I don't remember. I just do not remember him being a 2-5 at all. Anyway, besides my ignorance, let's move on to thoughts on tech cards. Should they be nerfed in some way? I know Cam Best released a YouTube video about this today or earlier in the week, and it's a hot topic in the game, and Glazer and I were arguing about it as we were preparing for the episode. So Aaron, what is your take on should tech cards be nerfed?
I mean, I'm fine with some of them being nerfed. Like Killmonger is probably fine as a 3-2. Cosmo is probably fine as a 3-2. I think 4-3 for Shang-Chi and 4-4 for Enchantress are probably right. But yeah, I don't think it matters, especially, to be perfectly honest. I'd probably leave them alone. I don't feel like control is dominating them. And if this were a problem, then control decks would be like the whole ladder, right? And like these are very good cards, and I want them to be played because you have to be good at a card game to be able to like be like, okay, is this a type of deck that's running Enchantress? If they're running Enchantress, how does that affect how and when I play things? Like, I actually think these cards are better designed than Rogue, for example, or Super Skrull, which I think are more or even Absorbing Man, which I think are more like crapshoot high rolls. I think that these cards are good tech cards, and I think their presence and prevalence is why the meta is so healthy. Because no one wants to be dealing with like if Cosmo goes away, then just like the second everyone has Wong, it's just like all Wong all the time, right?
Yeah.
Like it's just their game, their power has allowed the developers to push other extremely powerful cards, and I think that is good for the game because you can push other extremely powerful cards knowing that these answers exist.
Absolutely. Like, there's definitely, I mean, you want to avoid a situation where tech cards become auto include ubiquitous cards. Probably the closest to that this is Cosmo. I think the reason for that is this game only has certain number of like mechanics that you can really do without like really pushing the game to its limits. Hearthstone had this problem for a long while. You know, there's ongoing passives, and Revealed. And, you know, Revealed is going to be the most interesting, some of the most interesting space in the game. And so you're going to push more and more powerful ones. So Cosmo needs to be, you know, powerful to keep up with that. I think the problem you could run into if you nerf a lot of these cards is they become so bad that, like, you know, like, say you bring, make Shang-Chi a 4-2, right? Like, that's just bad. Like, it doesn't actually really, like, catch you up in a way that is, like, really necessary to sort of, okay, you're all about slapping these big dudes down. Cool. Shang-Chi, boom, punish you, right? It's instead of, like, oh, I still lose to your, like, couple of crap that you just played before you're able to play your big dudes. Oh, that's not fun. So you're both able to do the really fun over the top thing that your deck does, but I'm also not able to respond to that. Like, responding to that isn't fun for me. Again, it skews the balance, right? You want to avoid these tech cards being completely ubiquitous and they're just in all decks. And I think right now, Marvel Snap, they're in a pretty good place, particularly as design space is pretty small, all things considered, in this game. You're just going to need them to be sort of solid cards that can come in and come out as necessary. I think they're also extremely important for their pool system. There's a reason why almost all of these cards are in pool two, because they let a person come out of pool two and compete with crazy shit like Wong, right? Like Wong, Cosmo, there we go, was bad or mediocre card, like, you just couldn't do anything. Like, I don't agree with the people who say pool two decks can't be pool three decks. And that's entirely because these tech cards are strong. And so you can, you know, for my initial, like, building my collection, I played a deck that was all pool two cards plus Magic, which was the first pool three card I opened. And this is before they did the four cash thing where you were getting cards on a much regular basis. It felt like I was never getting cards in those first couple of months that I was playing. And that deck kept me, like, in the 40s, 50s, and 60s and enjoying the game and having fun and feeling like I could keep up with somebody who had Wong, somebody who had Destroyer, somebody who had Leader. These cards that were very powerful, much more powerful than any individual card in my deck, but I had answers to the over-the-top stuff they were doing. My deck wasn't necessarily as good as those decks, but it was able to compete, and I was able to steal and win games. So if they're going to keep the pool system, they have to keep these tech cards strong to allow pool two players to keep up with pool three. All right.
Our last question is from Ridiculous Hat, Discord mod, Hearthstone player, and my favorite Hades podcaster. He asks, is a hot dog a sandwich? And I'm unfortunately going to give a long, annoying answer. I'm so sorry, dear listener. I would tell you Roy is going to timestamp this, but he's not. So, yes, is the short answer. The short answer is a hot dog a sandwich. Here's my logic. Definitions are never exact. Definitions are buckets of traits. Where, like, you try and make the bucket big enough that everything that has those traits fits. However, even for simple things, when I teach this in class, we use chairs and beef and cows. Like, what counts as beef, what counts as cow, and just ranking things on their chairiness. And you ask to define a chair, and then you realize how freaking impossible it is to define something as simple as chair. How many legs does it have? Oh, well, that's totally immutable, right? Anywhere from, like, none to, like, six, right? Does it have to have a back? Is a stool a chair? So on and so forth. And these buckets and these definitions are extraordinarily complicated, right? A hot dog has a lot of the traits we would consider for a sandwich. Does it have all of them? No, absolutely not. Could it be considered something else in an entirely different category? Of course it could. However, it has enough of the traits that we would consider a sandwich that my general philosophy for definition, because otherwise you end up excluding things that clearly do belong in the category. You would, like, for example, like a stool that could have three legs and no back is a type of chair, but, like, it's losing so many of the things that you would naturally consider chair that you're excluding something that obviously fits under chair if you're not including stools, right? So definitions should generally be kept broad and inclusive, and if it fits most of the categories, if the person who's doing the defining would like to include it, then it's generally better to be inclusive than exclusive in that case, because that inclusivity allows for a broader and healthier use. That is my explanation. A hot dog is a sandwich. Roy's asleep. Roy, wake up.
I am not asleep. I was just pondering how many angels can rest on the head of a pin. But let's move on to topic two of our podcast here, which is to talk about some of the decks that we've had a lot of experience. It being the holidays, Glazer and I have had additional time to play Marvel Snap, and we've definitely spent it playing some decks. So where do we want to start, Aaron?
I'm going to start with the deck that got me to Infinite. We're going to go over four decks. We're going to talk about them a little bit. Excuse me, I'm sorry about that. And then we'll go on to the next thing. So the deck that got me most of the way from 90 to 100 is something I titled Ramp 2. I stole it. I wish I knew from where I stole it. If I stole it from you, please let me know. I would love to give you credit. Here is what I played. I played Sunspot, Ebony Maw. Then there was a variable 2 spot. Currently in that variable 2 spot is Scorpion. I believe it's supposed to be armor, but I kind of want them to kill Monger, or like killing my Maw and Sunspot doesn't super annoy me. Electro, Wave, Agent Coulson, and Agent Coulson could easily be something else, but I like Coulson because when you don't see Electro or Wave, but do see Coulson, you now have a curve. Then I skip 4, which is why Zabu next season is going to be so good. I skip 4. I go Claw, Arrow, Leader, Doom, Magneto, and Odin. So the deck is turn 1. You either Sunspot in the revealed location if possible, or you Ebony Maw in an unrevealed location. Then you would like to Scorpion or play the other 1-drop as necessary, right? Or you, if you had Sunspot, you can just take the turn off and pop. At that point, you would really, really prefer to Electro. Wave is fine. You would prefer to Electro. I think I said this last week. I'm going to say it again. Sorry. Electro means you can go 5-6-6, which would mean in this case, I know that Arrow is excellent, but my general preferred 5 is actually Claw. Because Claw plus Maw in a location means they have to spend a lot of resources contesting. I like to go Electro into Claw, then into a Magneto. Sorry, a Leader into Odin, or a Doom into Odin, or Magneto into Odin, preferably. Or Doom or Magneto into Leader. Is the idea. And at that point, like, their stuff has become so jumbled and moved around the board that I've got a good chance of winning. Also perfectly acceptable is Wave. Wave then goes 6-5-6, which is pretty nice, unless you Wave Odin and then just go 6-6, right? Like, you can play 3-6s in a row that way, but so could your opponent.
Yeah.
All of these combos are completely nuts. You get a lot of power in a lot of different locations. A Ebony Maw at 7 with a Claw plus 6 is now 13, right? So, like, that means they have to play a lot in that lane to win. And then if you Doom, now they have to get up to 18 in that location that all you really poured resources into was Ebony Maw is fantastic. And as they're trying to do that, Magneto and Arrow are dragging them around the board, and Doom is just throwing 5s all over the place, Leader is stealing their stuff. The deck is absolutely great. Roy saw plenty of it. What are your thoughts on the deck, Roy?
I agree with what you're saying. I actually have a question for you. Do you think Coulson could be Polaris?
I don't see why not. Coulson could absolutely be Polaris. So I found that, like, Arrow is obviously a phenomenal card, right? Like, I'm not going to pretend Arrow's not great. But Arrow's probably the least important high drop in the deck.
She's definitely awkward with Ebony Maw sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you're not sure where you want to pull them. But, like, she's just so strong, it doesn't super matter. I don't know. I think Coulson could easily be a player. I like when I don't see Electro and Wave that Coulson gives me a four to play.
Definitely.
I think Coulson's saying, like, you can now do something instead of stand here feeling funny is nice.
That makes sense. I don't have Coulson, so that's one of the reasons why I'm asking. I don't remember what we put in the version that I was playing for a while of this deck, which did help me climb some. I think they...
That spot was, I believe you were running one less low cost. Oh, no, you don't have Psylocke. Yeah, I don't know what you're playing.
We might have put, like, Sandman. We went through a phase where we were putting Sandman and a bunch of decks. But anyway, which we'll get to. In a, I think we ended up including the deck that... My version of Destroyer here has Sandman. But anyway, I think that this deck is really important to remember that one thing we definitely learned a lot of when we were playing this was Wave is the worst good card in the deck because a lot of the deck's like ramp power is that it's asymmetrical. You know, you're okay playing one card a turn with Electro because you're just paying these like super huge cards, but Wave kind of like really does let your opponent further their game plan really early, which this deck doesn't always have answers to, because it has some answers, but they're mostly like moving around tempo kind of answers versus like hard answers. Like it doesn't have like a Shang-Chi. So sometimes if your opponent does something really powerful on turn four at the same time you're doing something really powerful, it's not that good for you. Like probably the most games I both lost when I was playing this deck and watched you lose was when you waved. But wave is
or
a good
saw nothing.
Or saw nothing, right? That does happen with these. Or saw all, or the Roy classic Roy way is see all the top end and none of the like low end. But you know, outside of like variance, right? Because wave is part of the game's the deck's fundamental game plan. Like outside of variance, when you see the wave side of the game, I think that's the worst part of it. And that's something to really keep in mind. And what you drop when you drop wave is something you want to be thoughtful about, I think would be the best advice that I have about this deck. Versus like Electro, like you just drop Electro and then whatever. Like you don't have to make any decisions until you see what you draw after you drop Electro. Wave, you kind of like have to have a plan. And sometimes it might even be worth not playing wave if the plan you have is not strong.
There's also the... possibility of if you're not going to play Wave or Coulson, you can run Psylocke like as a three and then add an extra five. But you do need a third five if you're going to play Psylocke.
That's totally fair. Why don't we move on to talking about the deck that I spent the most time playing? And you and I had a good session, I think, right? Right? Or maybe two sessions of playing this?
Couple. He calls this, just for the record, he calls this Magentress.
Magentress. It is in my deck as just Bootman.
Too. That's what it is.
This is Hood Nova Carnage. This is, I believe, no, I'm trying to think of, no, it has Mojo. His version has Mojo. Mysterio.
No, his version has Black Widow.
Has Black Widow, right. Sorry. Mysterio, Bishop, Killmonger, Shang-Chi, Enchantress. This is definitely a difference. His version has Crossbones, which I thought I opened, but apparently I didn't. I don't know. Maybe I dreamed opening Crossbones. I put Rescue in there, Magic, and Captain Marvel. This deck is really strong. It can steal games a lot. I think that its power is sort of, it has a couple of game plans that it can do. It can do some of the sort of Carnage, Destroy, BS. It can also stack really hard. It can be very confusing for your opponent of like where you want to play, which I think is one of the things that is really powerful about this deck. Your opponent kind of has to contest all three lanes against you, which some decks just don't do very successfully. That's really, really awesome. It plays Magic, which I think is one of the most underrated cards in the game. I think Magic is both a lot of fun. I mean, Magic is also one of my favorite X-Men characters / Marvel characters. So I'm glad I'm able to play a deck with her. And I think that Magic is also like a card that people don't always expect. And that can be really, really powerful. I do think the biggest drawback to this deck is it doesn't really go like over the top easily. Like I mean, obviously, like, Silver Surfer is a deck that this sometimes struggles against. If you, like, don't draw perfectly, or get lucky with, like, what Carol is able to pull off for you, that's Captain Marvel, to be clear. I think that's kind of its biggest drawback, is there's just some games where you just, it doesn't have a finisher, I guess would be the clearest thing. It doesn't have something on five or six that, like, really goes over the top of what your opponent can do. Closest thing is Captain Marvel. She's very good, but she's not like Odin or even Arrow or some of these like really over the top cards that can sort of win games on their own. There's no single card that really does that in this deck. And that's something that's really important to keep in mind when you're playing it, that you all don't have some kind of end game you are playing towards, which most Marvel decks do. Marvel Snap decks do. This one is very much like games are decided in turns 3, 4, 5 versus like turn 5, 6, which is a very different way to approach Marvel Snap than a lot of the other top meta decks.
I agree with all of that. This is a Sarah deck with Magic instead of Sarah, is how it feels to me. Right? Like, this is almost exactly the versions of Sarah I've been playing, except with Magic there and Captain Marvel, where I've been playing her.
I agree. Right. Like, yeah, Magic is very much like...
excuse me.
Yeah, Magic is kind of, is sort of, like, an extra turn is basically a Sarah activation, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's giving
them a miracle, too.
It is. But just some decks, that is not good for them, right? And there's... it just gives you more time for you to draw your stuff.
Draw Shang-Chi and Enchantress in particular.
Yeah, Shang-Chi and Enchantress. So, like, against, like, Death Wave and some sort of, like Wong decks, she's very strong. If you suss out... It's also actually very strong against Patriot, as long as they're not running Silver Surfer. This deck is bad against Silver Surfer, because gives them an extra turn to draw Silver Surfer, which this deck doesn't always, like, doesn't have. Like, Surfer is, like, your worst matchup, I think, with this deck, would you say, Glazer? Like, because they just so consistently could go over what you do. And so you need to be careful with Magic. Like, against some of those, like, Zoo decks, like, the extra turn to draw Enchantress, an extra turn to draw Shang-Chi, you know, and be able to, like, Shang-Chi one turn, Enchantress, you know, Shang-Chi on six and something, Enchantress and on seven and something, kind of what can wipe out those Zoo decks, particularly if they've gone big with, like, something. You, Surfer, that's just, like, maybe if you're going second, sometimes you can, like, steal games against Surfer, but usually a Surfer player will snuff out that you're playing something unusual and try to go second. And if they're going second, there's just nothing you can do against Surfer. So that's an important thing to keep in mind.
100% true. So I've been messing with this deck in my head a lot because I think it's so cool. The version I've been playing, like, when I got up to 103 screwing around before, I was like, this is stupid. Why am I trying to climb? There's no benefit anymore. I basically cut Rescue for Maximus. And I cut Captain Marvel for Sarah, and only ever played either Captain Marvel or Magic. Either Sarah or Magic on turn 5. Never both. I would just try and read the board and decide what I thought was better for me, and, like, let that be how I played the game. And, like, I was this way. I was basically miracling no matter what, right? As long as I saw either of the fives, I always had a miracle turn. And the 3/7 is not as good as a 4/9, obviously, but is a better curve consideration and lets you play more stuff. And it was working really, really well. If anyone wants to try that, feel free.
Absolutely. I would actually probably, if I had Crossbones, for some reason, honest to goodness, I thought I opened Crossbones today, but I didn't. I honestly think I probably dreamed it last night. But anyway, I think I want to try the Crossbones version, because I think Crossbones is better. Like, Arrow is I think Rescue is best on 4. Like, if you have Rescue on 4, she's amazing. She's a bad top deck, right? In a way in which I think Crossbones isn't. Like, Crossbones, like, you're usually winning one lane with this deck, and so you can just, like, sort of Crossbones on something else. On 6, for example, like, guarantee your opponent can't go over you here, and, you know, play 1 to, you know, play a couple of cards there. I think that, and that may help with the Surfer matchup, having access to sort of like something that could just sort of help you basically be extra stats to match their Surfering, would be interesting. So I'm excited to, when at some point I open Crossbones, to try that version. But we should probably move on. Do you want to do your deck, or do you want to do another one of mine first, Aaron?
No, let's do Destroyer.
Okay, Destroyer.
So, our friend and listener also asked for a Destroyer deck. So this is the Destroyer deck we were playing, or Roy was playing, that I helped Roy build. There are 1.5 changes that I think I would make that I will talk about as we go.
Okay, you want me to read it then? It sounded like you were going to read it,
please.
But I'll read it.
No, I'm sorry. Please,
yeah, so this deck is Ant-Man, Daredevil, Armor, Colossus, Mr. Fantastic, Captain America, everybody's favorite Russian dog, Cosmo, Sandman, the spiciest card, I think, in this deck, Warpath, Professor X, Destroyer, and Spectrum. So what I think... What's really important to keep in mind about this deck, this version of Destroyer, is when to play Sandman and when to not play Sandman. Sandman is really good against Surfer decks. Sandman is really good against Patriot decks, which Patriot decks just plague the mid-tier of the ladder. I just feel like every other deck I play is some variant of Patriot, whether it's with Patriot or without Patriot. And just
with Surfer or without Surfer.
Yeah, Surfer without Surfer. Yeah, sorry. It just really screws their ability to do anything, right? If you play it on 4, or if somehow you're able to get it out a little earlier because of some location, like their inability to play more than one card a turn really stops them. It's also good if you could suss out the deck as a miracle deck. You can also just like completely screw them over. And that's sort of, it's sort of a tech card for that. And that's just something to really keep in mind. That's sort of the big difference, I think, from stock Destroyer that you would see that we have here. I will say again, the reason why I kind of stepped away from this deck was I just sometimes found it just like really hard. There were situations where you would have to pivot of what lanes you were contesting because of just something weird that your opponent did or some variance from a location. And Destroyers, it's hard to do that, and I kind of found that sometimes frustrating, but I think that this is a very, very good version of Destroyer that I think is good if you're in the middle tiers of the ladder. But Glazer, what did you want to change about this version that we built?
So the two things I would change, I think I would cut Captain America, although he is very good. I think I'd probably run Mojo instead, because I really value having the two, and I think that when I don't want a Sandman, I really want to be able to double spell on 4. And I think Mojo and Armor in a lane is really powerful.
That's reasonable. Maybe I'll try that.
The other change, I think, is I think I'm off Warpath as being valuable to this deck. I understand that you only want to contest 2 lanes, but Warpath is a giant shining announcement of that. And very often they just play like a simple like 3-3 in a lane, and they're just like, well, I'm gonna win that lane, I could ignore it. And that is a absolutely like shit feeling. So I think I prefer Claw.
That's interesting. I'm gonna have to try that. Those changes that you see, I might actually, as soon as we get off this call and do this, I might try that out. That sounds like an interesting innovation.
Well, Claw is a card I am now way, way, way higher on than I was since playing the ramp deck, pulled me right up. The highest, okay. So it's 10 power across 2 lanes, right? Claw is, while Warpath is 9 power in 1 lane. So 10 across 2 is better than 9 in 1, at least in some ways, right? Like they're at least comparable. In order to get 10 power out of a 5 cost, you're now playing Red Skull or Doc Ock, right? Like those are the only other 2 5 tens.
Out so of like five, that's, yeah.
Still, that's still really good. Those are the only other 2 like 5 tens or mores. which means that Claw is like a lot of stats, and a lot of stats in a way that's like really annoying for opponents. He also beats Doom is a regular feature of the meta, and like if it's a cannot be played location, like
which this deck does too, have trouble right? with sometimes. Like right. that's actually really bad for you because it like becomes really obvious what you're going to be doing and where you're going to be doing stuff.
Well, Claw can, unless it is the left location, obviously. Claw can just say, okay, so that location now has 6 power, or if I have Mr. Fantastic and Claw, that location has 8 power. You have to figure out how to get something real in there at that point. Good luck. And like Patriot decks can, right? Because Patriot's annoying. But like most other decks really struggle.
Absolutely. All right. Let's bring it home with the deck I've seen you playing the most since you... This might be an infinite only deck, or do you not care about your cubes deck? But
it's not bad.
I know this is what you've been playing a lot in Infinite.
So the deck is my Nick Fury deck. We decided to talk about it because everyone has Nick Fury now. This requires... that's going to bother me, excuse me. Pull three cards beyond Nick Fury. So those are Rescue. It has to have Rescue for this version. It has to have Daredevil, and it has to have the Quinjet. If you have all three of these, there are other higher pool cards, but they're not necessities. The deck is Agent 13 and Quinjet as your low level, and the second you see those two together, you should immediately go, oh, it's a Devil Dinosaur deck.
Yes, it is.
Thank you for noticing. Agent 13 and Quinjet. Then in the two spot, it's running Sentinel, your standard, but it's also running Daredevil and Black Widow. Black Widow is obviously a flex spot. It can be a lot of stuff. I just like a little bit of control. In the three spot, we have Captain America, and I have Agent Coulson there. Cap is just, I'm running a lot of low power stuff, and Cap makes it reasonable. And Agent Coulson, again, I like my curve filler because I tend not to run a lot of fours. I am running a whole 1/4 beyond playing Coulson. Coulson is in this deck my ideal turn three play. If you don't have Coulson, please run Mr. Fantastic here. Again, like I am more and more high on cards just on the pure numbers they provide and not worrying about the lanes. Mr. Fantastic is a 3/6. And that's really powerful. Like no matter how you slice it. Like it means that they have to figure out how to compete and mess with math. And it's a very good card. Rescue is in the 4 spot. Rescue is phenomenal in this deck. Into any of the following 3/5s, there is no 6. It's running 4/5s. Rescue is great into Iron Man because that's now 18 power there. And if you've done that in a lane where you have anything else, it gets out of hand extremely quickly. I really like Captain America into Rescue into Iron Man for whatever shit ton of power that they have to now contest. Professor X is in the deck because there's very little reason not to run him with Daredevil. And very often, like, once you've played enough, you just know what you can lock up with Professor X just because you played even without Daredevil. Especially nice, I found with, he's good, it's good, really good with Rescue because that's 12 power in a lane. That's now just like, crap, I gotta figure out how to deal with that. He's also solid, surprisingly, with Black Widow. Because, like, they tend to drop a Widow's Bite in a place they don't super care about, right? And, like, especially if you have priority going to turn 5, they'll very often be like, oh, well, I'll carnage that now. And, like, you're just, no, Professor X, and now you get to sit there with a 0 and a 2. Have a great day. And then the last card that's really good with Rescue is Nick Fury. Because that is 16 power on turn 4 and 5. It's basically playing 2 8s, right? Like, that's really, really good curve stuff, and your deck tends to work really well if you can get that going. And then at that point you have a choice of 3/6s to play on 6, or if you don't see any of that on either 5 or 6, you can just play Devil Dinosaur. It is also perfectly acceptable to go Devil Dinosaur on 5, and then ideally Devil Dinosaur is locking down a location, right? And then on 6 you drop Iron Man on top of another location and just say thank you, have a great day. The one issue is Agent 13, Coulson, Fury, and Sentinel draw. which is less a draw than Devil Dinosaur sometimes have. I have occasionally lost games with Devil Dinosaur where he's only like an 11, which is less than ideal. But still, a 5-11 is a, like, fantastic rate, right? We just talked about what a 5-10 was. A 5-11 is similarly excellent rate. So overall, yeah, this deck is really, really fun. And it's something to do with Nick Fury that's not the exact same deck everyone else is playing, assuming you have the key cards. And again, Daredevil is really, really nice with this deck. But like, as long as you have Nick Fury, and you do, and Quinjet and Rescue, you should be able to play it.
Missing Quinjet still. I was told by some friends of mine to not buy Quinjet.
You shouldn't buy Quinjet. It's a nice role-playing card. But like, this deck in particular really likes Quinjet.
Yeah, there's
like, just shitting out signals is fun.
It's a bit of a meta card right now. But could you replace Coulson with, could you go a little closer to Devil Dinosaur and play White Queen instead of Coulson if you don't have her? Or have him, rather?
I think you're probably short of three at that point, but I could see it.
Okay.
White Queen is just an excellent card that can kind of go in anything, right?
That's fair. I mean, she's one of the most generically good cards in the game.
Yeah, 4/6 is the best 4 you get without coming with some kind of penalty or requiring anything of you. We talked about this last week. And it gives you straight upside of a free card, a free power card.
All right.
And knowledge,
which can be very useful. And sometimes gives you a random leader that you can use to win.
It helps you define things.
Absolutely. All right. Like, let's bring it home, Aaron, with our first annual awards snap judgments 2022. All right. So what are our top judgments of this year?
All right. Snap judgments. Best pool one deck. Best pool one card.
Card, not decks. No. Mm-hmm. Our nominees are Devil Dinosaur, Enchantress, Odin, Apocalypse, and honorable mention is Professor X, a card I did not realize was pool one and does not feel like a pool one card to me. But apparently,
he's terrible until pool three.
Charles Xavier he's just also a complicated card. You know what I mean? Like, he feels like a trap card.
Nobody understands him but his Magneto.
I do love my Krakoa era kid version of Professor X variant. But Glazer, what card did we pick as our pool one card of 2022?
It's Devil Dino. Devil Dino is either the second or third best pool one deck. It is like unequivocally the best pool two deck. And then in pool three, like, it's in two or three real like contenders for best deck. Devil Dino is amazing. It is consistently one of the best cards in Marvel set.
Inarguably, I think he might just be the biggest, just the best Marvel snap card in general when you think about it across your entire experience as a player. That brings us to pool two, which we have four nominees: Leech, Shang-Chi, Killmonger, and Storm. Glazer, which did we pick as the best pool two card of 2022?
One of my two favorite cards in Marvel Snap as a whole, Shang-Chi.
It is the card that I've split the most.
Proud owner of the best. Oh my god. How did I do that? No. The best Phase 4 Marvel movie.
Sure. I mean, it was definitely one of the better ones. We're not here to suss out which Phase 4 movies is the best or not. I probably liked Wakanda Forever more, but that's fine. Anyway, I agree. Shang-Chi, I think, is also just like a really fun card. Just yesterday, we stole a deck. I mean, stealing decks on Black Panther Wong decks with Shang-Chi is just a great feeling. Anyway, this brings us to best. This was the one Glazer and I fought about both the definition of and what it was the most, is best early pool three card to buy using your tokens that you get right when you jump into pool three. That gives you, and these options are Destroyer, Sarah, Patriot, Mystique, and Leader, with an honorable mention going to Wong. Now, this is probably going to be one of our more controversial picks. Glazer, what did we pick as the best initial purchase with your collector's tokens of Pool 3 in 2022?
I think it's Sarah. I think a lot of the cards that you're used to in Pool 1 and 2, like Angela and Bishop, remain really, really powerful with Sarah, as do Shang-Chi and Enchantress and Lizard and the little Destroy package that's all Pool 1 and 2 cards. Like, I think it's Sarah. I think Sarah is phenomenal. And the second you get Sarah, you're ready to compete.
Absolutely. I agree with you that in this case, I think there's definitely an argument for sort of Destroyer, which we didn't, which we did end up putting in here, right? Yeah. Destroyer as well, because they're very similar in the sense that, like, their core archetypes really just need pool two cards. And then that allows you to keep up with the meta. They don't necessarily, I mean, Sarah, I think Mortar the Destroyer creates a new play style. Kind of Destroyer is just like Devil Dinosaur that is always big and only has one answer versus two answers. Devil Dino, both Shang-Chi and Rogue slash Enchantress can answer a Devil Dinosaur, while Destroyer can only be answered by Shang-Chi. I think it's just like really fun, and you know, there's Sarah really makes you feel like you're doing it when you play that card. And I think it's a really fun card to keep you addicted to Marvel Snap, which brings us to best pool 4. All right. This one only elite Easy. Infinite player, Aaron Infinite Glazer. That is terrifying ideas that really can give us an example of this, but our nominees are Luke Cage, Coulson, Absorbing Man, and She-Hulk. Glazer, what did we pick here?
This is the easiest one. It's She-Hulk. Coulson and Luke Cage are good. I can't find the right home for Absorbing Man, but She-Hulk is an excellent card. In my head, I've sort of started to classify She-Hulk as better America Chavez.
Yeah, they play a similar role. But I think America is a little more consistent of a card than She-Hulk. But yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, I don't have Shulk, so I'm not really in a position to say anything really about her beyond what I've watched streamers and you play. So speaking of cards, I don't believe either of us own any Pool 5 cards, correct?
Correct. This is purely shit that I hate to see come down against me.
Absolutely. And we also contested, and also watching streamers, our options here are best pool 5 we've got of 2022. We've got Galactus, Shuri, Bast, and Darkhawk. Glazer, what did we end up picking here? We disagreed about this one, and I'm going to give you, but I think we ended up going with you here.
Shuri. I think Shuri is the most powerful pool 5 card right now by a decent amount. I think both Bast and Darkhawk are excellent, and Galactus is very cool. But Shuri comes down and, like, I'm immediately in half panic mode. Is it going to be Vision? Is it going to be, like, my God. Someone Shuri'd and then dropped, they Shuri'd on 5. And they played some one drop out that I was like, oh, this shouldn't be so bad. Like, they were clearly playing a Spalting deck, and then they played freaking Maximus, and I was just like, oh, dear. This is a problem. Like, it's just, it makes so many things, like, lane-winning threats that I think Shuri is the best. I don't think Bast is that far behind. It's just, I think Mr. Negative is so inconsistent.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely found that. The power level is there, though. I think, I don't know, Shuri is good, don't get me wrong, but I think of all of these, the most generically good is Bast. I think Bast is just a one drop that you can put in a bunch of decks. Like, I think it can be also good in not just Mr. Negative, but just sort of in like as a, like a backup plan for a Sabro 3 deck. Like, there's, you know, to play around Scorpion. There we go. And some other like health reduction stuff that exists out there. Power reduction stuff. So I think Bast is just probably of the pool 5 cards, I think there the most generically good. And for me, I think generic goodness, particularly with, is the most important thing. But definitely, I see what you say about Shiri. And
before we move on, I have a little more to add on that. So I think as soon as Silver Surfer moves in, Silver Surfer might claim the crown as best full five card. However, I think both Shuri and Darkhawk get insanely better the second Zabu is out. Shuri for two and Darkhawk for two is just completely bonkers, right?
That's fair. That is fair. Yeah, I mean, there's some pretty powerful cards coming in the next pass. I don't think if we want, or not pass, both the pass and the next, like, series five cards are all kind of busted in their own way and pushing some archetypes that need some love, I guess, question mark. So we'll see. I think that the cat, Zabu, is the most interesting of them. But anyway, it's a future
episode. We're gonna talk about Zabu, which will be next week, just so you know. Next week, we will talk about, we'll probably do later in the week because we should get a couple days of playing with these cards to give you bullshit. But we'll talk about Zabu and we'll talk about like anything else they announce or nerf or whatever in the process.
Absolutely. That brings us to the best season pass card of 2022. This is all of them since launch. None of us were in the closed beta. So that means there's three. This one's pretty easy. Silver Surfer, Miles Morales, Black Panther, with an honorable mention being Wave, who was, I believe, a season pass card in beta. I mean, I'm just not even going to give this to you. It's Silver Surfer. We could just move on.
Before we move on, I just want to note that, like, Miles is such a cool card. I actually feel bad for him in this company.
I mean, there are some cool decks that you can build around him, and I think he does...
You don't build around him. He's, like, so much more of a role player than the others.
Have you seen the Miles Moon deck that Hoogland plays? Like, that is definitely building around Miles. Like, the ability to play one for five, or five for one. Like, I think there are ways to do that. Also, like, Miles, they're eventually going to print new move cards, right? Like, this pass that's coming up is, like, pushing Zoo. Like, really pushing Zoo, right? And they're going to, I assume, put new move cards, right? He's a card that scales up, I think, the more Marvel Snap cards there are in the game. I think move definitely needs some cards, like, maybe... a six drop that isn't Heimdall so that people will stop Heimdalling just because they can't, which is my main thing about move decks.
Other deck I've been playing, you haven't been on while I played it. The other pool six deck I've been playing a lot, besides, I guess, Cerebro. I've been playing a fair amount of Cerebro. We actually skipped Eldron, by the way. But
did we?
Magneto and Heimdall in my move deck as my sixes. This way I can choose, do I want to move everything or do I want to move their shit somewhere? And I like the dichotomy. The deck feel much better.
You're right. I did miss best build around. That brings us to Patriot, Sarah, Wave, Silver Surfer, Mr. Negative, and the honorable mention is Cerebro. Glazer, what did we pick for best build around?
I think it's Sarah. I think the fact that, like, there's Sarah Surfer, there's Sarah Control, there's Sarah Destruction, there's Sarah, like, pure positive things. There's Sarah and Mr. Negative. Sarah is just, like, I don't know if it's the best card in the game, but, like, it's the most versatile, I think, card in the game. So you can build a lot of stuff around. Also, Cerebro apparently has the Cerebro 2 deck, Jeff Hoogland's deck, has a really high win rate, apparently, lately. So if you're interested in that kind of deck, please go check it out. I play it once in a while. I really don't like it. It's not for me, but, like, it's possible Cerebro is better than I give it. Like, Cerebro to me feels kind of like worse Patriot.
What's weird to me is it actually feels like worse Surfer to me.
Okay.
Because, like, it can never really get as high as Surfer. So, like, every time I beat Cerebro, like, I either have an answer, like Enchantress, or I just am able to, like, go much higher than them. In a way that, like, that's what I've not liked about Cerebro, but when I've played it a few times, I'm still missing a couple of, like, I'm missing Goose. I think that's the big card that I'm missing out of Jeff Hoogland's deck. And so I haven't like played a lot of two, but I have played a lot of Sabro 3 with Surfer, and it has felt like when I haven't seen Surfer, that it's just a bad Surfer deck. Anyway, let's move on to the tech card of the year. Shang-Chi is one option, next with Enchantress, Killmonger, and Professor X. Which do we pick, Aaron?
You skip role player again, but it's fine. Shang-Chi is our tech card of the year. Shang-Chi is so weak. I think Shang-Chi is the most important card in the game. It's Shang-Chi or Cosmo, which somehow I didn't write here. Oops. Let's pretend I wrote Cosmo, not Professor X. Whatever. So I think Cosmo is great. But what Cosmo is largely rated as a tech card is stopping Wong, right? Like, he does a lot of other little things, but it's the, like, stops Wong or, like, shuts down a brood thing, or, like, you get lucky and hit him on a surfer that makes him really good. Shang-Chi basically says, if you don't have priority and I can tell you're playing some big shit, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he turns entire games. I think Shang-Chi is freaking phenomenal.
I think you're underselling Killmonger a little bit. I think Killmonger keeps but I'm just saying, like, keeps a lot of decks down and has a lot of like positive like things that you want to do with him, so he can do play both roles. But anyway, let me go on to role player of the year, which gives us the options of Daredevil, Brood, Bishop, Sunspot, Carnage, and Nova, with an honorable mention of Angela.
Angela would have won before the nerf.
So what won after the nerf, then?
I think it's Brood. Brood being in Cerebro, Patriot, and Surfer decks. And, sorry, Cerebro, Patriot, Surfer, and negative decks is a lot. Mm-hmm. There are very few things that are scarier. You don't know if they have Surfer, right, if you're not playing Leech, obviously. They drop a Brood on 3 or 4, and you're just like, am I even bothering to fight for that location that's now, like, that's showing me a 3-6, but is really potentially a 3-15? Like, is it worth going in, like, pouring resource after resource in to stop their 3 energy worth of Brood? Right? Like, and God forbid they're playing, like, Patriot Surfer, and they see Brood, and then they see Patriot, and, like, and just, it's such a stupid strong card. Brood is so weak.
Absolutely.
The Brood is the reason to play Patriot Surfer. Yeah,
yes.
Patriot himself is a third.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that one. Let's go to most hated card of the year. The options are Silver Surfer, Shang-Chi, Wong, and Leader. Glazer, what did we pick?
Leader. I think Wong is close, but, like, Wong has answers and Leader doesn't. I mean, Leader has answers, but, like, your answers are kind of get good. that's not, like, an answer people really like getting. Whereas, like, I really hate Wong. Wong keeps beating me. It's like, bro, just put Cosmo in your deck.
You can put Cosmo and Rogue in your deck if you really, yeah, if you really want to, like...
And have a great day. Right. Also, hey, Shang-Chi... Wong players, if you're gonna Wong and then Mystique, unless you're real sure, I don't have Cosmo or Enchantress, put them in different lanes.
Yeah, that is a play that I did a little bit of today. It's good.
Like it's just, you don't need double Wong is nice, don't get me wrong, right? But like single Wong wins the game usually. So like your double Wong is kind of just showing off. Just put them in different places, you'll be fine.
Absolutely. As long as you're not playing, like, the Panther version, right?
Even then. Oh, I guess because then you're playing the Panther on 5, right?
Yeah,
I guess what we're talking about mostly is for negative decks.
Negative and Surfer decks that are running.
Mm-hmm.
It's because not all the Surfer decks that have Wong are necessarily negative variants, so. Anyway.
Well, if I'm running Surfer Wong, which I am, I'm running a Shang-Chi Wong Surfer often now. I don't think it's as good as my other Sarah decks, but like I like Sarah decks and I don't care about my rank right now. So I'm not running mystique in that. I feel like only one ongoing to copy means it's not worth it.
Absolutely. So that brings us to our card of the year, which is Arrow, Leader, Sarah, or Wave. Aaron, what did we pick?
I think it's Leader, largely because Leader's going to get nerfed into Oblivion over the next year. So this was the Leader's time to shine, and shine that giant head did.
He really did. I have to agree. He's definitely, I mean, just pure on the discourse, he wins. Before we move into our final but new recurring segment, Glazer, do you have any sort of end of year Marvel Snap thoughts that you want to throw out to our friends and loyal listeners?
Yeah. The community is in a lot of ways starting to do the toxic thing already. And I think a lot of it is just people that aren't used to card games. Like, check out some YouTubes, listen to some podcasts, figure out some stuff, right? Like, if you're here at this point, an hour and a half into this podcast, I'm assuming that's not you. But, like, if you know someone who's there, they probably need to get used to the fact that card games have metas, and you need to, like, learn how to read a meta, not just the cards. Because the meta will determine, like, what you're complaining about. Like, and there's people that go mythic that are still complaining about these same things. And, like, things can be strong, but nothing is broken. Because, like, no deck is carrying just millions. Like, I play this deck, I have these cards, I'm infinite. Like, that's not how this game works. It's very high variance. Like, learn the gambling stuff if you want to, like, succeed. And, like, chill out. It's still fundamentally free to play unless you're Roy and I am being silly.
Absolutely. I also definitely want to say at the end of 2022 that Marvel Snap's a great game. I've really enjoyed my time with it so far. I plan on playing it a good deal in 2023, obviously to make content, but also because I'm enjoying it. But I definitely agree with Aaron in the sense that I think it's important to think about what do you want out of your card game experience. And what, just because you don't necessarily like something doesn't necessarily mean that it is bad for the game. And you need to think about how you can find multiple ways to it. If you're enjoying a game overall, my advice is, particularly for card games, this is very true for card games, which is to find multiple ways to enjoy the game. And that could be playing two or three different decks. That can be different modes. We don't have different modes, so it's going to be right now in Marvel Snap, going to be multiple decks, and thinking about like what kind of play experiences you are enjoying and seeking those out, and that there is more to both Marvel Snap and life than your rank. And that's an important thing to ask yourself. Because sometimes it's just fun to play the cards and characters you enjoy. Like our card of the week, Jubilee, who any 90s kid like Glazer and myself has to love Jubilee. Anyone who was raised or came of age during the 92 X-Men era has to love Jubilee.
Do I? Because I hated 92 X-Men Jubilee.
Like the show Jubilee? What's the show Jubilee?
Show Jubilee and early Jubilee were not for me. I came to love Jubilee. The only Jubilee I think I really loved is Generation X Jubilee.
I mean, that's fine. I mean, that's still 90s Jubilee. That's just like mid
90s Jubilee. Different 90s Jubilee.
I mean, she's like fine these days. I mean, she was a vampire for a while. That's like crazy to think about. But anyway, poor Jubilee. I like her in the Hickman era. She's pretty cool. But what we're going to do in this segment is we're going to pick a card and we're going to talk. I mean, it's weird to do this in a audio form, but we're going to talk a little bit about the variants and which ones we like the most. And we picked Jubilee because there's a lot of Jubilee variants, and I think that they're all pretty cool. And sort of right now we have the Pixel variant. I think Jubilee, agree or disagree with me, do you think Jubilee is one of the better Pixel variants?
Yeah, 100%. The sunglasses are what really make it. And like the jacket flowing, like it's dynamic that she's running forward toward the camera. Like, I think it's definitely a fantastic Pixel.
Absolutely. It's also basically
the same pose as her regular Jubilee.
It is kind of the same pose. You're right. I mean, her core art, her base card art is fine. It, like a lot of the base card art, it looks like, yeah, it's 92, but it looks like Marvel slush art. It's like, what art do they have hanging around in the Marvel offices? But it's fine. Her rare variant as Snap Fan, again, we're on the Snap Fan Discord. Snap Fan, your resource for Marvel Snap stuff, is art. It has Jubilee carrying a baby. It's from an era where she was carrying a baby. I don't remember what the baby was. I vaguely remember the storyline.
It's very complicated, but this is,
and I think this is when she was a vampire.
You can actually see the fangs in the picture.
Yeah. It's the Dodsons. Terry and Rachel Dodson are the artists. It's not really, I'm not a fan. Like, it's fine. Like, if I open this, I'd be okay.
This might be my favorite. Like, I don't know why, but I really like it. I love the, like, little cub baby with the little toy gun on the back. I think it's kind of adorable. And, like, Vampire Jubilee, I read that, and wasn't that long ago, but if you asked me to tell you a
story. I mean, it was a while ago now, Glazer. It's, like, 2017, which is a while ago.
Okay, fine. Like, compared to, like, 90s Jubilee, right? But, like, either way, what my main memory is, it's that shit insane. Like, even for X-Men comics, like, the whole everything that starts happening with Jubilee and that baby are absolutely batshit insane. And, like, there's, like, the Frankencastle era of Punisher, and then there's, like, Cosmic Ghost Rider, and there's, like, Vampire Jubilee, where it's just like, yes, this is incredibly stupid, but kind of delightful, too. And that's where this falls.
Here's what I disagree with you, and this lets us bring it over to both my favorite Jubilee variant and also the statement of nothing about X-Men is as crazy as the current X-Men status quo with Krakoa. This art is another one of her rare variants, which is her art of her dress from the Hellfire, the original Hellfire Gala, which is what, 2019? One of those.
21, I thought.
Was it 2021? It was during the pandemic, right? Was it? It might have been. Whatever it was. I think this art is awesome. Like, I almost bought it in the shop. I held back. I was proud of myself. But this is my favorite art. It's an awesome Jubilee design. Like, almost all the X-Men Hellfire designs are, like, goat.
I think this was great design, but I don't like it for a card. Because if you take the Jubilee off it, I have no idea what
it is. It looks like Jubilee. I mean, it looks like, maybe it's because it's like, it looks like modern Jubilee. Like, that you open a Hickman era X-Men book, that's what Jubilee looks like. Like, the way they draw her. Anyway, the next one that you and I both agree, well, actually, we disagree about this one. This is like, it's the super rare variant on Snap. It's like 90s anime style art. I don't know the context. I don't mind it because it's like Jubilee is like a late 80s, 90s character. So drawing her in that style kind of fits her.
The best Shang-Chi variant is in my shop and I'm not buying it. I'm just going to stare at it. It's the one. It's the Kim Jacinto.
I'll have to look at that one. So that brings us to the super rare. Another super rare. This is the Peach Momoko, I think is how you say that person's last name. This you said you liked the most, right? Was this your favorite?
This is, I like it. I just like it. It's not my favorite, but I do like it. I think it's cool. I've never seen it in play. It's very clearly Jubilee. I think what I don't like about it is that instead of her glasses, she appears to be wearing eye paint. And that bothers me, but I like the rest of it. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
I'm telling you, I think my favorite is the stupid vampire.
That's fair. That's fair. There's this unreleased one.
That one's very cool.
Yeah, I don't know. She looks kind of like Stature. Like, the way it's drawn, she looks like, I don't know, it's weird. I am not a fan, actually, of this one, of the unreleased one. And that brings us to, is it Ryan? Ron Gonzalez's? Ryan Gonzalez's. She's done a series for Marvel Snap. I mean, she has a kind of, like, contemporary style that's kind of mixed with that sort of 90s, late 80s, 90s, that I think this is not one of her stronger designs. Like, look at her Gambit or her Spectrum or her Shang-Chi, but I definitely think it's a good variant.
I think it's a little over sexualized for me. Jubilee is I generally don't like when most characters are sexualized, although obviously it's like part of the like genre. But Jubilee is a character in particular who's very rarely sexualized, and I prefer like one of the few female comic characters who's rarely sexualized to remain such. So this one's not for me. Again, I think I'm going Vampire or the unreleased one.
I'm going to go with the Hellfire Gala one. The Hellfire Gala one is really excellent. Our last segment here, as always, is our recommendations. Since we're talking about X-Men, we're talking about the Hellfire Club, the Hellfire Gala, I'll go first. I'm a huge Kieran Gillen fan. I'm particularly a huge Kieran Gillen Marvel fan. I have not been a huge fan of Jonathan Hickman or even Hickman's X-Men, but I really enjoyed Immortal X-Men. I got the first trade for Christmas. I really enjoyed it. It's great Kieran Gillen, but with X-Men characters. You should if you enjoy X-Men, if you enjoy Kieran Gillen, it's a pretty decent jumping on point. Like, I know enough about the Hickman status quo that I was able to jump in and understand everything. Your mileage may vary if you don't, but if you've definitely been reading some of the Hickman stuff, this is an inarguable, like, must buy, because it's definitely awesome X-Men comics. So, Glazer?
So, I talked about that exact recommendation on our other podcast, Props and Slots, if anyone wants to check it out. It is under the name The White Book. I think it is fantastic. It is one of the better comics I've read in quite a while. Although I'm kind of all in on the Hickman X-Men. Although obviously this is a different writer, still the high concept.
Hickman era.
Yeah. I've got two things. I couldn't choose between them. One is probably going to come up again. Although if I keep playing it, I think I played 12 hours of it in the last 3 days. I'm playing a indie JRPG created by a single person. It is called Chained Echoes. The game is fan-freaking-tastic. It's a little hard, but there are difficulty sliders. I haven't had to use them yet, but like sooner or later, I'm just going to decide that like I don't want my random battles. Well, they're not random. Every battle is like on screen, much like Chrono Trigger. But I'm going to want those to not take as long. The game is uber fun. The battle system is great. The story is super 16-bit era charming. It is very, very, very heavily influenced by Chrono Trigger. And the exploration feels a little bit like to the pasty to me, although without the travel stuff. It is a fantastic little JRPG. JRPGs are fundamentally the only genre I play, and I think I said this, but give or take a Hades or Slay the Spire here or there. I basically only play JRPGs, and Chained Echoes has thus far been really fun. I tried to start Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and it was just way too anime for me, like within the first 2 hours. So I was like, I'll just fire up Chained Echoes, cleanse my palate, and come back to Xenoblade 2. And well, we'll talk about Xenoblade 2 in a couple months, it seems.
All right, folks, thank you for sticking with us.
Wait, my second one. I had a second one. I saw Glass Onion, the Knives Out story. It's on Netflix, so like if you have Netflix, you should totally watch it. It's Rian Johnson's second Knives Out movie. It is nowhere near as good as the first one. The first one's one of my favorite movies of the past 5 to 10 years. The second one is just a very, very fun, good romp. If one of these movies comes out every 2 to 3 years for basically the next forever, I would be a very happy camper. These movies are delightful. Okay, outro us.
Okay, sorry about that, friends. All right, loyal listeners, again, if you would like to engage with us, we are on Snap Fans Discord. Look for the Snap Judgments channel. Link to how to join the Discord will be in the description/show notes for this episode. You can also email us at snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. Until then, until we hear from you or until our next episode, Happy New Year, friends and loyal listeners. We are so happy to have you on board with us, and we are really looking forward to snapping in 2023 as much as we were in 2022. So my last thing I need to do is thank Aaron for joining me today. All right. Everyone, take care, stay safe, and have a happy new year.